In the spring of 2016, the chaps at Blasterteeth, my digital publisher, decided to throw in the towel. It'd be about a year before they'd finally ship the last ebook from their warehouse in space-time, but the decision was made and everyone went off to pursue other activities. I asked Al Guthrie if it was possible that he could go back to being my agent now that he was no longer my editor. He said he wouldn't be taking on any more clients at that point, as he was going to concentrate on his new job as UK editor for the digital arm of German entertainment conglomerate Bastei. However, he added, perhaps glibly, I wasn't sure, that if I could come up with a new Glasgow crime series, it might be suitable for Bastei. A new Glasgow crime series, I thought. I just received the go-ahead from Freight Books to write The Boy in the Well, the follow-up to D.I. Westfall's Song of the Dead, and the writing of that already felt a little behind the curve due to Freight taking so long to tell me they actually wanted it. So on the one hand, I didn't really have time to start a new crime series set in Glasgow. On the other, however, it's a rare thing to get invited by a publisher to write such a thing. Rare for me, anyway. I told Al I'd think about it, did the arithmetic, gave myself 3 weeks. 6,000 words a day, 5 days a week, 3 weeks. 90,000 word first draft. That seemed a lot, so I didn't say to Al that was the plan, in case it fell apart on the first day or in case he fell off his chair laughing. Anyway, I got in the groove and wrote The Judas Flower, featuring all new detectives Pereira and Bain, more or less on schedule. Another week or two tidying up, then handed it over. There were a few changes, but basically 95% of what I wrote in those caffeine-fueled 3 weeks, one glorious Estonian spring, was there in The Judas Flower. The book and the series was approved by the Bastei chain of command, and then they also asked that a shorter introductory prequel be written. I was into The Boy in the Well by then, but when that was finished, I wrote Cold Cuts, a punchy novella which became the first Pereira and Bain. Cold Cuts was published in November 2017. The Judas Flower came the following month. In the interim, I'd written book three in the series, The Art of Dying, and then, within minutes more or less of The Judas Flower being published, Bastei pulled the plug on the entire English language digital arm. Basically, I'd lost three publishers within a year, a crushing blow somewhat softened by Hodder picking up the Westfall series. Then, left with the unnecessary and unwanted third Pereira book, I recast The Art of Dying as a Westfall novel, and it became the third book in that series instead. Here, for the first time ever in the history of civilization, the opening scenes from Cold Cuts, in which we meet our new protagonists. It's a distraction. You think? Said Pereira, without looking up from the case file. Did you know that in the mid-60s, said Bain, when Kennedy had pitched his whole let's go to the moon thing, NASA had 4.4% of the federal budget. All that money just to get to the moon, which in space terms is like in your back garden. Now here we are, 50 years later, and NASA has 0.5% of the federal budget. Pereira nodded. She was into her third day investigating a convoluted case of second-hand car fraud. On the face of it, small time and of little interest. Yet the more she looked, the more complex it became, the greater the extent of the fraud. It was time to start expanding the scope of the team and the investigation, to begin the long process of putting a comprehensive case together. They're seriously not getting to Mars with that budget. I mean, they talk about it, they try to get everyone excited, that's the plan, right? They want people to want to go to Mars. But then you look at the issues involved and it's like, holy shit, there is no way. I mean, they have all these programs to gauge the psychological effects and to look at the dust and their people living in pods in the desert of California or whatever. But seriously, they're not even getting close to getting people there in one piece. These people are going to arrive on Mars, and if they're not already dead, their muscles will have atrophied and their brains scrambled. They'll need to walk out onto the Martian landscape needing to build a colony. Except they won't be able to walk and they won't be able to think about shit. Pereira glanced past Bain's shoulder into the DCI's office. Parker was talking to Griffin from forensics, and as she watched the body language and tried to work out which of the cases floating around the department it might be related to, Parker caught her eye, then turned back to Griffin. Looked like she would be getting the call into the office in a minute, and she could hope that whatever that was going to be more interesting than the car mileage racket. Aren't there private companies putting money into it, like Branson and these kinds of people? She said, absent-mindedly. Branson is in passenger spaceflight, said Bain, not Mars. You're thinking of Elon Musk, and sure, he's putting in billions over time, but you know what? Whatever he says, it ain't happening in his lifetime. It just ain't. And we haven't even got to the part yet where people are dying on test runs, 10th of the way there, or, you know, just disappearing off into space, never to be heard from again. It's a distraction from what? She asked, checking off a number with a red pen and looking back through the paperwork beneath for the data she needed to cross-check the details. In the movies, didn't they have computers to do this kind of work? Everything else. Everything. Failing economies, unemployment, drug use, wars in the Middle East and everywhere else, terrorism, you name it. It's a simple thing to say, hey, look at us, we can go to another planet. But think about this. All the nuclear powers on Earth could drop all the nuclear bombs, every single one of them, killing everyone and decimating the planet, and Earth would still be genuinely more habitable after that than Mars is now. That doesn't matter. It's the promise that once we've gone to Mars, then holy shit, there'll be other planets out there. Then all we have to do is ignore the fact that the difference between getting to Mars and getting to a planet in another solar system is like the difference between getting to the bathroom and getting to Mars, and we can all be excited. He glanced up at her, despite the fact she was looking past them into Parker's office. He continued talking anyway. Wait, what's that you said? There are babies being killed in Syria in case they become terrorists in 20 years' time? Sad, but look, space! Finally, he followed Perez's gaze over his shoulder, and at that moment, Parker made the gesture for her to come into his office, and she stood quickly. Sergeant, she said. Hold the thought. You weren't paying attention anyway, he said, and she smiled and patted him on the shoulder. Into the office, Parker with his head down looking through the report, and Griffin from Forensics standing with his arms folded beside the desk. They acknowledged each other, then Perez stood and waited for Parker to look up, which she did after a few seconds. Come on, Alia. Still working through the Maybanks fraud case. Minefield, he said, shaking his head. It's complicated, but it's not going anywhere if you need me to look at something else. I do, yes, said Parker, and he nodded at Griffin. Dan? We've got a case sent over from Food Standards in East Kilbride, said Griffin. There's a sandwich shop in Millport. Eat and Go, it's called. Eat and Go? Yeah, I know, said Griffin, with a shake of the head. I mean, as a name for the restaurant, it'd be pretty dumb, but for the sandwich place with no seating, where your only option is to leave and then eat. Dan, said Parker, without looking up. Been open about a month, said Griffin. They opened a sandwich shop in Millport in October. Go figure. A few days ago, they get a delivery of various types of cooked meat. There's one meat they don't recognise, and for some reason they decide to serve it as pork. The customer complains, take a closer look at the meat. I'm hoping this is going to be a horse meat story, said Pereira, and Griffin smiled and shook his head. They went to the local butcher. He didn't recognise it. They got in touch with Food Standards, I think reluctantly, but glad they did. Now it's over with us. And there you have it. He nodded at the report again, and Pereira asked the question with her eyebrows. From the thigh of a male, 31 years old. A male? Human, said Griffin. Yes, human. 31 seems very precise. You've already identified him. Kevin Moyes. He'd been missing for a couple of weeks. We had his DNA on file. Crap. There's a story. You were looking bored over there, Inspector, said Parker, smiling. He closed over the folder they'd been reading and held it out to her. This is Dan's report, but he hasn't gone into details of the missing person. He's a Millport local, so you should head down there now, speak to the island constable and get round to the shop. Anyone been in contact with him yet? You're going to be bearer of grim news, Inspector. I expect they were thinking it was going to turn out to be horse meat too. Pereira nodded, looked at Griffin, asked, it's all in here, and turned to the door at his nod. Alia, said Parker, and she turned back, stopping at the tone in his voice. Something personal, she thought. You know how things are around here, he said, a slight movement of his shoulders accompanying the vague remark. Money, money, money. In short, I'm being bumped upstairs to Justice Department liaison of all places. Shit. Did we know that was coming? It was kind of in the offing. I'd heard a rumour, and he broke off as Griffin excused himself from the discussion and moved to the door with a wave. Thanks, Dan, said Parker, and Griffin was gone. What kind of timescale, asked Pereira. I mean, I've just got you properly trained, sir. I'm not sure I want to lose you. Parker laughed. Then the laughter died away and he made a gesture of helplessness. Today, he said. Then he looked at the clock beside the door. Got a meeting in my new post at 3. You're kidding. Nope, afraid not, Inspector. That's the way it goes. Dog eat dog. So how long do you think the post will be vacant? It's not going to be. The new man's coming in about half an hour. You can meet him when you get back. Don't worry about waiting around. Name's Tom Cooper, just been promoted out of Renfrew. How does that... She began and she shook her head. She was the detective after all. His newly promoted DCI salary is way cheaper than your 20-year DCI salary. Yep, I'm going to be filling a superintendent spot, but without the temporary promotion. Why didn't you tell him to piss off? She said. Parker did not answer, and slowly Pereira nodded, accepting that it was probably not a choice he'd been given, and that perhaps it was time he was moving on anyway. It may have been almost a year, but the uniforms upstairs were not going to forget the shambles of the Rutherland Three. Pereira let a long, slow breath and shook her head, positive act of shaking the pieces into place. so you'll be gone by the time I get back. I will. We'll never see each other again. As the crow flies, we'll be less than 50 yards apart, and while I grant you we shan't be bumping into each other in the bathroom, you know what I meant. Let's have a coffee Friday lunchtime, said Parker. We can compare notes. Working for the younger DCI might be just what you need. I rather liked you, the old head, she said. Finally, Parker was able to bring a little light to the conversation. He waved away with a smile and said, bugger off, gone with the job. You don't want DCI Cooper to think you're a slacker. They stood outside the shop for a few moments, backs turned to it, looking out in Millport Bay, the wind cold in their faces. No sign of life out in the water. Very few people along the seafront, the crazy golf long since closed for the winter, a bleakness over the town. Across the water sat the nuclear power station, grey and grim and foreboding, accompanied by the past couple of years by two giant wind turbines. Ever been down here before? Asked Ben as a teenage girl walked past, cigarette in one hand, taking a selfie with an iPhone 7 with the other. When I was a kid, once or twice with the school, my parents never came. Did you bring the kids? Said Ben. Have you met Aeneas? Said Pereira, and Ben smiled. Come on, let's talk to the sandwich man. And she turned. They walked into the shop, the bell on the door tinkling as they entered. There were two people behind the counter, a young woman who was washing dishes at the back, and a man who was currently making a sandwich in the counter behind the clear display case. Despite all the price and sandwich labels inside the case, there were no sandwiches. Sorry, folks, said the sandwich man without looking up. Total run today. They looked at the empty cases. Then they both turned and looked outside at the deserted street and seafront. They turned back. Weather-wise, best day we've had since we opened, said the sandwich man. Just give me a minute. I'm doing another batch of tuna mayo. You want something else? Let me know and I'll do it next. He looked up, smiling. The smile died as soon as he saw the suits and the faces of Pereira and Ben. Wait, what? Said the sandwich man. Food standards. Pereira held forward her ID. D.I. Pereira, D.S. Ben, she said. The sandwich man studied her ID closely. Serious crime unit? What's going on? I'm afraid we're going to have to ask you to close the shop, Mr. Craven. Why? I can't. I mean... And he looked helplessly around the establishment, so there might be some obvious, identifiable reason why he couldn't possibly close. The girl at the sink had finally turned and was looking worriedly at Pereira. Seriously, said the sandwich man. You can't close the shop. Kids get out of school in an hour. They're down here like locusts. It's like the only business we get. Pereira and Ben looked down at the empty display of sandwiches. The sandwich man watched them, nodded in a resigned way and said, all right, we barely sold in all day. The only time we shift anything is when school gets out, and even then, but still, you can't close us. Not now. Ben turned, put the bolt across the front door and turned the close sign round to face outwards. Look at that, he said. Magic. That's no funny. Is there some way we can talk, Mr. Craven? Said Pereira. Sure, how about my lawyer's office? Pereira silenced the objections with a look. The fight left the sandwich man, even though he still didn't understand what it was about, and then he nodded at the brown wooden door at the other side of the counter. They were standing in a small, untidy office, a room in which no one ever spent much time. There was dust on the shelves, paperwork and a few untidy piles on the desk, boxes of drinks on the floor. The picture in the calendar still showed October. Closer inspection would reveal indeed that it was October from 3 years previously, an autumn view along Glen Affric. The dust in the room predated the opening of the shop by quite some time. The sandwich man stood with his back to the window, his arms folded, as Ben closed the door behind them. They took a moment to size each other up. Pereira let the silence do the work for her, watching as Craven grew more agitated, finally unfolded his arms, folded them again and said, what? Where'd you get your cold meat? Asked Pereira. What do you mean? She lowered her head a little, lifting her eyes at the same time so that the question was repeated with a somewhat affected glower. Affected or not, it worked. She looked up at him from her position of being perhaps 9 or 10 inches shorter than he was. There's the delivery guy. He delivers the meat. Always the same guy? No, there are a few of them. Look, it's not like I have my own farm, like I'm raising the pigs and chickens and shit. I order from MPP. Who are they? They're the producers, but they don't send the meat. The meat comes via a distribution company, Meatlux. Deliver the guy works for Meatlux. Those people are huge. They deliver to half of Scotland. Don't know the name. Why would you? They're trade. They don't do adverts on the telly at Christmas. Funny. Where are they based? Eurocentral. Have you been? He smirked. Have you lot ever been to a sweatshop in Indonesia that makes your plastic police whistles? you know if they deliver to any other outlets in the island? Asked Bain, changing the course of the questioning. Pereira kept her eyes on Craven. She encouraged Bain to throw in questions from the sidelines, so didn't mind the change of tack. Craven looked over at Bain, head shaken, having moved subconsciously to a place where every single question would be treated with disdain. Sure, there's another sandwich place along the road, don't remember the name. Sure you don't, whatever, you'll find it easily enough. Couple of cafes, you'll need to check with them. In the coal market, I think they deliver there too. These guys deliver everywhere in fucking Scotland, man. Seriously, I don't believe you people. I'm just trying to make a living here. Trying to get something going. I was in benefits for 5 years, got off my arse, trying not to be one of the people, doing my best, man, and along you come and shut me down. What the fuck? When did you take your last delivery? Asked Pereira, ignoring the commentary. If it was true, and when the police interviewed anyone about anything, it was usually worth assuming that whatever they said wouldn't be, then this was going to be a killer blow to him and a dreadful hard luck story. Not many sandwich shops are going to survive serving human flesh, given that people would likely have eaten that flesh. This story was going to blow up, and Eat and Go, along with any other outlet which took a delivery of similar meat, was going to be in trouble. Wednesday, said Craven. They come every Wednesday morning. We get our supply for the week. Not that we got all that much, mind. Slow start, right? But we'll get there. I mean, I know what everyone's thinking. Why open a sandwich shop in a place like this in October, right? But we'd be all right. I've done the maths. Spring comes round, when summer comes, we'll be well set, established. All the kinks ironed out. Got a plan, you see, he said, tapping the side of his head. And along come you people with whatever the fuck this actually is. Jesus. Maybe, said Pereira. Rather than blaming the police, you could blame the person who inserted human flesh into your cold meat order. What? His face changed, shoulders straightened a little. In an instant, both Pereira and Bain could see the genuineness of the reaction. He hadn't seen that coming. And perhaps, said Bain, you could consider looking in the mirror, as you were the one who blindly put it on sale when you didn't know what it was. What do you label it as? Asked Pereira. Pork, he said, then added, Jesus, with a shake of the head, as he continued to come to terms with the news. Who was it? He asked, looking up. Why did you take it off sale? Craven's face was still contorted in query, then he shook it off and looked curiously at Pereira, as though having to recall the question she just asked. Some guy, a customer who'd bought the sandwich, brought it back half-eaten, said it was beef. So had a taste, and he was right. Well, at least, didn't he taste like pork? He swallowed, seeming now to realise the implication. He was a cannibal. He'd made cannibals out of the customers. Do you think it tasted like? Asked Bain. Still getting used to the fact they'd eaten another human, Craven stared at the floor, swallowed again. I need a glass of water, he said, feeling a bit. Then he finished his sentence with a shake of the head. Pereira looked around the room, walked over to the box of bottled water, lifted the edge of the cardboard, took out the 500ml bottle, opened the top and passed it to him. It's okay, Mr. Craven, she said, as he took a gulp, then unnecessarily wiped the back of his hand across his face. It was several days ago. You don't sound like you ate much of it. You did the right thing contacting the FSA. Bastard, you just told me to look in the mirror, he said, head shaken again before taking another gulp of water. Do you remember how many people would have eaten the meat? Asked Bain. 3, said Craven. Maybe 4. Still had plenty left. Thank fuck we barely have any customers, right? No one else noticed? Not that they said. People usually don't. Any complaints about any of the other meat you served? Asked Pereira, and once again this seemed to shake Craven and shoulders tensed. Wait, what? I thought it was just this. So it is, as far as we know, said Pereira, but did anyone say anything else about any of the other sandwiches? Another loud swallow, followed by Craven lifting the bottle to his mouth and another glance off to the side. Not much of a poker face, thought Craven. Do you know a Kevin Moyes? Asked Bain, and Craven switched his gaze, eyes widening, and once more the bottle of water was lifted to his face.